Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Troubleshooting Communication in WebSphere MQ. Today's presenter is Rick Armstrong. Rick has been working in IBM Level 2 service for 19 years, the past 1.5 years in WebSphere MQ Level 2 service. His past experience working in COS Communication Server Level 2 support provides deep skills in networking issues. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Rick.
Thank you, Joseph. Good day, everyone. Glad you guys are joining this presentation this morning. And as Joseph said, you may wonder why someone in WebSphere MQ is talking about networking issues. And it's because of my background in ZOSCOM server that I can talk about networking issues at the TCP/IP layer and with a little bit of authority. I've traveled around the U.S. and around the world presenting information when I was in ZOSCOM server level 2, diagnosing networking issues and those kind of things. So I have had a little bit of experience, and I hope that as we progress today, you guys can gain a little skill as well in networking issues, and you can apply them to your job and make your job maybe a little easier. Of course, that is our goal here, to do that, to make your job a little easier, maybe a little less cumbersome for you in your own shop. So let's go on to page 2, Joseph. We're going to talk about several things this morning or today. It's morning for me, so forgive me if I keep saying that. We're going to talk about TCP/IP networking concepts, and the reason we're going to do that is because if we don't understand the concepts, then we have no base to go from to talk about problems. So we're going to talk about some networking concepts, and then tracing at the network level, and what does that mean? What kind of trace is that? What does it look like? And what do we look for as a network trace, network level of tracing? Then we're going to look at a very specific channel connection overview. We'll look at a network trace of an actual channel connection from start to finish and kind of dissect that a little bit and so we understand what's going on at the network layer there. Then we'll also talk about a couple of common problems that we see in WebSphere MQ support and what they are, what they mean, and how to go about diagnosing them and fixing those problems. So that's what we're going to talk about, and so let's jump into that with slide number 3, Joseph. So we take a very simplistic look at a TCP/IP network, and by the way, we're going to limit our discussion to TCP/IP and not LU6.2 this morning, because I know the majority of your connections, for at least of the problems I've been involved in, have been TCP/IP, and so if we take a very simplistic look at TCP/IP network, and we see the client in the top left portion here trying to connect to a ZOS queue manager, and there's this nebulous thing we call an IP cloud in between, and you may control access to the client, you may control access to the ZOS queue manager, and sometimes this IP cloud is out of your control. It's monitored and maintained by an ISP, so it's a little bit out of your control, and you don't know what goes on in that IP cloud. And we're going to try to understand, by looking at one piece or the other, how we can maybe understand what's happening in that nebulous spot there in the middle we call the cloud. And then as far as tracing is concerned, you know, whether you trace on ZOS, which we're going to talk about today, with a TCP/IP packet trace, or whether you're tracing at the client with, you know, a network sniffer trace, Wireshark, Snoop, IP trace, or any other operating system trace that may exist, we're going to look at those issues and or those pieces and try to fit together what's happening on the actual channel connection. And as I said, some things are within your control, some things may be out of your control, and we're going to go about trying to get in to see we can figure out, looking at one piece, how we can figure what's going on with the whole. So, Joseph, let's go to page 4, please. So, as an overview, when a channel connects, there are things that happen under the covers for WebSphere MQ. And we're going to look at some of those things and how that affects the traffic on the network. And so if we take this and we break it down into a client versus a server versus a client, and there's three bullets here, the client server and then client and server, and the actual TCP/IP calls that occur under those. So let's start at the top and talk about a client. In order for a client to send some information across the channel, there has to be a connect to start the TCP/IP connection for the channel. So that connect call allows the client to do that. Now, that doesn't do any good unless the server has a listen open for a port. And so the server will issue this set of calls, bind to associate a socket with a port, a listen to open up a listen for that port number, and then once a client connects, it will accept that connection. And then the client and server can issue the socket call, as we said, a write, a read, and a close to close the connection. So those four socket calls are issued by a client and a server. And we'll break this down a little bit further in our next slide. Can we go to slide 5, please? This is an overview of a client application on the right. In this case, let's talk about a client sending a message to a WebSphere queue manager on ZOS, and the server, the queue manager, on the right. So in order for the client to be able to connect, there has to be a listen open for a port, for the channel port, on the server, on the right-hand side of this slide. So if we go from the top on the right where it says the socket function, the server will do a socket, get a socket, do a bind call, and then do a listen. And then the connection state is actually in a listen. The connection state is in a listen. So it's ready to accept. TCP/IP is ready to accept client connections for this port. If we go to the right, to the left-hand side of the slide, we'll see the client application. So the client application will need to do a socket call, and then it does a connect to the IP address of the server. And that causes network flow. Everything up to this point has been internal to each particular side of the TCP/IP host, whether it's the server side or the client side. So the connect actually causes network flow. And then you can see this packet flows with a send flag turned on to say I want to connect to that port and this IP address in this port. And then a send ACK comes back from the server side, and then an ACK flows from the client. At that point, the three-way handshake, the TCP/IP three-way handshake is completed, and the connection goes to an established state. At that point, we're still on the right-hand side here. The server doesn't accept for that connection. And once he does the connection, accept for that connection, the server can then send and receive data across that connection. And if we're following down now and we look on the left-hand side, we see the client does a write of 100 bytes. So he has 100 bytes to send over to the server. And that causes network flow again. 100 bytes of data goes across the connection. And then from the server side, an acknowledgement of those 100 bytes goes back to the client. This is all at the TCP layer we're talking about here. So that the TCP side on the client understands that the server has received that data. And then if we follow down through this diagram even further, we'll see that the server sends 100 bytes across, and the client acknowledges that 100 bytes, again at the TCP layer. So at this point, there's been 100 bytes sent from the client and acknowledged from the server, and the server sent 100 bytes and acknowledged from the client. So then the client issues a close for this socket. So it says, I'm done with the socket. I want to close it. And so that also causes network flow, and the FIN packet goes across to the server, and the state goes to FIN wait 1. On the server side, you see the connection state goes into a close wait. And I'm sorry these things don't line up very well here, but that close wait should be over on the connection state and underneath the connection state, waiting for the server to close the connection. Because if you keep in mind that TCP connections are two ways, right? There's a client side of the connection, and then there's a server side of the connection. And because this client side closes connection, doesn't mean the server has closed his. It will wait for the queue manager or the chin on this side to close this connection as well. So it goes into a closed wait. But the FIN is acknowledged from the server. And then a FIN flows from the server side because he has issued a close as well. And then an ACK for that flows from the client. I know this is very confusing, but we're going to break this down even further and look at it in a trace. And so hopefully it'll make a little more sense. And we'll refer back to this a little bit later on. But it just gives you an overview of the network flow that happens when a connection is established, when data is sent back and forth, and then when the connection is closed. This is what the overview of the connection or the network flow looks like. And, Joseph, if we go on to slide number 6, please. So an overview of the TCP stack or TCP IP stack, we look from the top to the bottom. We have an application, and it's either communicating through TCP or UDP. We have the IP layer and then the network interface, and then the network, the IP cloud underneath that. So, and keep in mind, the applications can talk TCP or UDP or both. WebSphere MQ does both. At times, for most of its traffic, it uses TCP at the transport. But when it has to do name resolution or IP resolution to name, it uses UDP to do that. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. So there's different layers here that that the communication flows through. And each of those is broken down into has headers, and each of those headers has information that's pertinent to problems that happen on the network, and that's what we're going to get into here in just a moment. And, Joseph, if we go on to slide 7, please. So this is just as a reference for you of how to gather a TCP/IP packet trace on ZOS. And, of course, the commands are different if you're going to use a different type of trace that you use in Wireshark with a Windows PC someplace. Of course, those commands are going to be different, and it's got a GUI interface that makes it simple for you to do. But from a ZOS perspective, which is my area of expertise, if you will, this is how you start a packet trace on ZOS. And there's two components to it. There's the component trace, which is the trace CT command, and then there's the vary TCP/IP piece of it as well. So those two pieces, the trace data is actually captured with the component trace, but the vary command actually tells TCP/IP on ZOS to start the packet tracing. And so, anyway, this is, again, is just for your reference, and we're going to get into now the actual packet trace output from a channel connection. We could go into slide 8, Joseph. Okay, so when you have a packet trace and it's formatted in IPCS with the full parameter, this is the first part of the packet trace. And I didn't put all the packet trace on one screen because it makes it too small, it's too difficult to read. So if you'll bear with me, this is a piece of an individual packet. And if you looking at this, you'll see that this is at the top of it says this is packet 4. Each packet is numbered in a ZOS packet trace, and this one happens to be packet 4. So if you want to reference packets later on, you can get the packet. You can do it by packet number. Also, there's a timestamp at the top. And then if we go to the second line, we see this is from interface GE1. So when it's a from interface, keep in mind that this is from the perspective of ZOS TCP/IP. So if it's from the interface, it means it's inbound to ZOS TCP/IP. If it's from the interface, it's coming in. And if it says to interface, that means it's going outbound from ZOS TCP/IP. Again, we have the time of day clock. And then in the middle of the screen there, you see this flags colon in, another indication that this packet is inbound to the TCP/IP stack on ZOS. And this is kind of a summary of the packet to follow. So, Joseph, can we go to slide number 9, please? Now we get into the actual IP and TCP headers for that packet. And if we look at the IP header first, you'll see I have some things that are bolded and underlined. These are things I want you to pay particular attention to. The IP header, in this case, is a version 4, not version 6. Version 6 would look a little bit different. Actually, look a lot different. But the IP header has the source and destination IP address. And that's important, of course, when you're following the flows in the network, the source IP address and the destination IP address. Again, this goes with the packet, the summary you saw before, so we know that this is coming inbound, and the source IP address is the client IP address, the 9.37.245.161, and the destination address, of course, is ZOS, which is 9.20.122.71. And let's go down to the TCP header, which is just below that. And we can see the source port, which is 3165. That's the client's port number. And the destination port, which is the server port number, which is 1601. And again, remember we talked about when the client does a connect, the first flow across the network is the SYN flag going across. So We have a packet coming in from source port 3165 going to destination port 1601, and we know that this is the beginning of this connection because the flag, the SYN flag, is turned on in this TCP header. Another thing I'd like to point out to you that we'll maybe discuss a little bit later on is the MSS value, which is two lines below the flags. That's the maximum segment size, and this is negotiated on the at the beginning of the connection when the SYN flags flow. This is telling ZOS that the client can only accept 1,380 bytes in each individual packet. So if you send a packet larger than 1,380 bytes, it won't be accepted. So that could be important when there's networking issues, performance issues in the network, data is not flowing fast enough. Look at this maximum segment size of the packets when the connection is established to see if it's large enough, because you know, some older networks or some older technology will not accept packets that large. Let's go to slide number 10, please. Now, this is the reply from the ZOS server, the packet from the reply. You'll see that the IP address source and IP destination IP addresses are reversed. So this packet is coming from ZOS going back to the client in acknowledgement of the SYN that was just sent. Remember, in the overview, we saw the FIN goes across, the ACK SYN comes back, and that's what we're seeing right here. So, again, the source port in the TCP header is 1601, the destination port is 3165, and the flags are ACK SYN, SYN ACK, or ACK SYN. Okay, Joseph, slide number 11, please. And again, if you look at the IP header, the source and destination, again, are reversed. This is coming from the client. And if we look at the source and the destination ports, we understand that this is the same connection. And this one has the flags of ACK only turned on. So at this point, that three-way handshake that we talked about from the TCP perspective that tells that the connection is in established state from both sides. And so at this point, we know the connection is established from a TCP point of view, and what happens next is that the server will need to accept the connection. We don't see any network flow that happens on for an accept because that is internal, but that we know from looking at the overview that that's what happens. So the server then accepts the connection, and if we go to slide number 12, Joseph, we'll see something a little different in this IP header. Before, we saw the packet length was 40, and now we see the packet length is 276. And keep in mind that the IP header is 20 bytes. The TCP header is 20 bytes. So that's a total of 40. So we know that there are 236 bytes of data, actually, from the application that's being sent in this packet. So it's another way to look at IP header. You can tell how much data is sent. And this slide, this packet is actually continued on to slide 13. So, Joseph, if we can go there, please. Now, this is the actual data broken down or displayed in the packet trace itself. Again, if we look at the top, the IP header is there. It's not formatted for you. It's in EBCDIC. And then the protocol header, or the TCP header in this case, is there as well. Some information is formatted for you, like the IP source and destination address and the destination source and destination port. And then we see in the data portion of this packet, there's actually 236 bytes of data. And if we look over into the iCatcher portion, we can see what this data is. And there may be things that you recognize in this portion of the data, and there may be things that you don't recognize. We can't break this down because this is information that's not available to you, but you can, as I said, you can see some information that's readable. But I will tell you, if the connection is encrypted, of course, this data is not readable, and it's encrypted data, of course, and it makes things a little more difficult to understand what's going on. Anyway, this is the data that flows. Keep in mind that if there's any confidential data, that data is readable here in the iCatcher portion of the packet trace. So just be careful if there's confidential data. Okay, let's go to slide 14. Okay, and slide 14 has an acknowledgement number. Acknowledgement number of 93412-8815. And let's go to the next slide, 15, Joseph, please. And this is the reply coming back from the ZOS channel. And this is the CHIN MCA responding back to the client's initial data. So let's go on to slide 16, Joseph, please. And I want to explain something about the sequence numbers and ACK numbers from a TCP perspective. You'll notice that we talked about sequence numbers. Oh, we didn't talk about sequence numbers. I'm going to talk about them right now. The TCP sequence numbers and the acknowledgement numbers in the TCP header allows TCPIP to keep track of the data that's sent and the data that's been received from the other side. Remember that TCP is a reliable transport, meaning that, well, if you send data to TCP, TCP ensures data delivery or notifies you if the data is not from it. If you're an application and you use TCP, TCP will ensure the data is delivered. Or not, if not, it will respond back to you with return code or reply code to saying that the data was not delivered. So the way that it does that is the connection starts out with a sequence number, and when data is sent across the connection, the other side acknowledges that with an ACK number. And in this case, the 236 bytes was sent with a sequence number that ends at 8579. The ZOS side sent back an acknowledgement number that's 88, that ends with 8815. So if you do the math, you subtract the original sequence number from the ACK number, you get 236, which says, I got all 236 bytes that were sent across. Now, the only caveat to this is that when SENs go across and FENs go across, meaning the beginning and ending of a connection, those increase the sequence numbers by one. So if, let's say you start out a connection with a sequence number of one, and you send a SEN across. When the ACK comes back from the SEN, the ACK will be two because the SEN increases the acknowledgement number by one. The same thing when the connection is closed. The FIN takes up one byte in the sequence number. So we will see that a little bit later on when this connection closes well. So that's how TCP keeps track of the data that's sent and received across the connection. Okay, Joseph, let's go to slide 17, please. Okay, so slide 17 is more negotiation of the MCA. Now, keep in mind that when the channel starts, the TCP connection is established, and then the MCAs start negotiating the channel information for the channel connection. So there's a connection at the TCP layer, and then there's application data that need to be exchanged. And what we've been looking at here is the negotiation that goes on between the client channel and the server con channel, the MCA information that's exchanged between the two. What I wanted to highlight here in this is that the IP header and the protocol header at the top of the page, you'll see that this is an EBSDIC, but the last two words of the IP header is the source and destination address. So the 0925-FOX5-ABLE-1 is the source IP address. The 0914-7-ABLE-47 is the destination IP address. And if you look at the protocol header, the second word and the third word are the EBCDIC values for the sequence and acknowledgement numbers. So this 37 Able Dog, Able Charlie, Able Fox is the sequence number, and the Charlie Baker, Charlie 0, Fox Able 01 is the acknowledgement number. So if you ever need to use those, they are in this portion of the packet trace. Let's go to slide 18. Joseph, please. Again, this is more negotiation from the server con on the ZOS for the channel. Nothing particular here I wanted to point out. Let's go to slide 19, Joseph. Now, this is actually going to encompass two slides, but I wanted to highlight here the data length is 513. So we've seen data length. We notice that this is a larger packet. And if we go on to the next slide, Joseph, slide 20, we can see that this is the actual application that's sending the data and the actual message itself at the very end of the iCatcher data there. This is the test message 3 for the Westy. That's the actual message that was sent across from the client. Again, if the connection is encrypted, this data is not legible or not readable. And so let's go on to slide 21, Joseph, please. Okay, this is acknowledgement from the ZOS that the message arrived. If you notice the ACK number and the previous sequence numbers, you'll see that they acknowledged all 513 bytes. And we know that ZOS TCP got the data. How do we know if the application got the data? That sometimes is a tricky question, right? Because the data could have been hung up in TCP on the ZOS side, or the CHIN could have never received the data. Well, one way you could tell is by continuing to look at the network flows for replies that go back. If you know how the application, in this case, the channels, communicate, depending on what comes back from ZOS, you can make the assumption that the channel got the data. Or you can do an application trace, in this case, a CHIN trace, to see if the application actually got the data. So that's sometimes when we're looking at problems, we ask for a packet trace on ZOS or a snipper trace on the network, and we also ask for a CHIN trace on ZOS or a CHIN trace on the client to see if the data actually arrived up to the application, the channel in this case. Joseph, let's go on to page 22, please. This is the client MCA once you've sent the data doing a status check of the MCA. 23, please, Joseph. And the server con replying with, I'm okay. Slide 24, Joseph, please. And then the client, once he sent the message and did a status check, says, okay, I'm going to close this connection. This is notifying from the application, the channel on the client, to the server con channel on ZOS that I'm finished now with this channel, I'm going to close it. So at that point, the application, both sides of the channel know that the client is going to close the connection. So now we know that the network is going to flow again. So let's go to slide 25, Joseph. And again, this is the overview that we saw earlier. But if we focus now on the bottom of this overview, down here where the fins and ACKs close. So the client has just sent some data to the client channel, it sent some data to the ServerCon channel on ZOS saying, okay, I'm done with the channel, I want to close it. The ServerCon replied, okay. And so now the client actually issues a close, which causes a FIN to flow across the network. And then that FIN should be acknowledged from ZOS, and then it's up to the ServerCon to close his side of the channel, and that which will cause a FIN to flow from ZOS and acknowledgement to flow back across from the client. So let's follow this through to the end, and by going to slide 26. Joseph, please. So, again, we're looking at the network layer here, and this is the client has issued a close, and here is the TCP reaction to that. So a FIN flows from the client to ZOS, and that's what we see happening here. So let's go to slide 27, please, Joseph. And then here is the acknowledgement from ZOS. And we know that this is an acknowledgement for that FIN because the sequence number for the FIN was ended in 9541. And we see this acknowledgement here has number ends in 9541. Again, we said that sequence sends and FINs cause the sequence number to be increased by one. So we know this is the FIN being acted by ZOS. So at this point, the client side of the connection should be in a FIN wait too, meaning I have sent a FIN across, I've gotten my acknowledgement back, and ZOS is sitting in a closed wait state, the channel connection is sitting in a closed wait state waiting for the CHIN to close the connection on that side. So now if we go to slide 28, Joseph, please. So now the CHIN has issued a close from ZOS, and it causes the FIN to flow from ZOS, and that's what we see happening here. Again, we notice the sequence number ends in 1945. And Joseph, let's go to slide 29, please. And then the acknowledgement from the client with the acknowledgement number ending in 1946, and at this point, the connection on both sides is closed. So that is how a connection is established. Data is sent back and forth across the connection, what it looks like in a packet trace, and looks very similar in a CIFRA trace or an IP trace or a Snoop trace or any other kind of trace that you can run on any other operating system or anywhere in the network. The IP and TCP headers look the same. You can watch the data flows, and the IP and TCP is well understood protocols and how things should happen. So if you see a FIN flow from one side and it never gets acknowledged from the other side, you'll know that the other side never got the FIN, or it got hung up someplace. Or if you'll see a FIN and an ACK come back for it, but a FIN never flowed from the other side, you know that the other side is waiting for, the TCP is waiting for the application, the CHIN or the WebStream queue to close the connection on that side. So, anyway, understanding the network flows helps you understand what is happening at the application layer a little bit. So let's go to slide 30, and I want to show you a different formatting of the packet trace and what you might be able to do with this information. So this is the same flow that we saw earlier, but this is the packet trace formatted with the session option, meaning that you'll see just one line for each packet that flows. And this will give you an overview of the connection. And you'll see the TCP header, the flags over here on the left-hand side. The IO means whether it's inbound or outbound to ZOS. And the sequence numbers, acknowledgement numbers. But the big thing here that you want maybe can help you is the delta time. If you're looking at a performance issue where packets or messages are not flowing quickly enough, not coming in or not being relieved from the queue quickly enough, it could be a network issue that's causing the problem. Here you can look at delta times. In this case, where there's small packets being sent back and forth, it's really difficult to tell. But when there's large messages being sent, and there's large sends, like one side is doing a lot of sends, the other side is just acting the data, you can see that there's delays and where those delays might be. So it could help you get to the bottom of a performance issue, whether it's ZOS or some other application that's showing it. I don't know that there are other network tracing tools that allow you to look at traces this way. There probably is. I'm just not familiar with them. But on ZOS, this is very handy. And if you're not familiar with packet tracing on ZOS and would like some help with formatting of the packet trace, how to look at the data, whether it's this or the full data we looked at earlier, you can send me an email. My email address is on the very first page of this presentation, and I'll be happy to send you some information about how you format the packet trace. So now let's look at a couple of specific problems that you can have in the network area. Joseph, let's go to slide 31, please. So the CSQX014 easy message, the listener has exceeded channel limit. This is a problem that we see quite often. And if you do a display of the channel status and you see a status, a binding, and a substate of name server, this is an indication that there is a name resolution problem on ZOS. So if we go to slide 32, Joseph, I want to explain a little bit what happens here. When a client connects to a ServerCon channel or to a channel in ZOS, the CHIN will attempt a get name info call to associate the IP address of the client coming in to a host name. Now, if there's delays in that response from the name server, then you can have requests backing up if there's many client requests coming in for new channel connections, because the task is single-threaded. So if one is waiting and there's hundreds backing up behind it, then, of course, because it's single-threaded, that's going to back up your channel connections being established. As I said, this is a domain name server problem. You can check the resolver settings on ZOS to see what name servers are actually configured. And the default resolver timeout is 30 seconds. That's really extreme. Usually, requests for an IP address or a host name from a DNS is sub-second response time. So 30 seconds is a little extreme. But check your DNS. You can do a NS lookup for the IP address of a client to make sure that that's being responded to from the DNS. There's also a couple of APARs, depending on which version of WebSphere MQ you're running, that's listed here that bypasses some of the unnecessary get name info calls in the channel, CHIN address space. If you apply the PTF, you also need a service parm, and so you have to ask level 2 to provide the service parameter to bypass those DNS calls. And but that's a problem that we see often, and because, I talked earlier that UDP is more another transport in the TCP/IP stack, and most DNS calls use UDP, which is not reliable if there's no acknowledgement and sequence numbers. So UDP, you send a packet across the network, it may get to its destination or it may not. If it does not, unless the application is accounting for it, there's no way to know because there's no acknowledgement that comes back from the other side. So Resolver uses UDP most of the time, unless it's configured for TCP, but the default is UDP to send that information across the network. So let's look at another common problem that we see on slide 33. Joseph, please. And this one is a CSQX208 easy or 206 easy. And depending upon whether the channel is in receiving mode or is in sending mode is which message that you get. But it comes down to this TCP return code on the for the CSQX208 easy. The return code is usually the 00000461, which is a connection reset, econ reset, or if you're sending data, the return code is an EBCDIC, which is 8 Charlie, or which is a decimal 140, which is, again, is an E-pipe, or the connection is broken. These are being reported from a ZOS perspective that the connection that used to exist for this channel is no longer there. And so whether it's receiving data and the receive comes back with a message that the connection was reset, or you're sending data. Remember I said the TCP is a reliable transport. So if you're trying to receive data and there's no data to receive because the connection is gone, this is the reply that the channel gets back, the chin gets back. And if it's sending data and it tries to send data and it gets this return code and reason code back, it's notifying the channel that TCP was not able to receive or deliver the data. And this, the 206 easy message has a reason code of 7669-7242. That, I know it doesn't mean a whole lot to most people, but that is actually an internal error from TCP/IP on ZOS, which means the TCP is not found. And this TCP is not the MVS TCP we're talking about, but a TCP/IP connection block, transmission connection block, which means the connection blocks are no longer there because the connection is closed. So let's go to slide 34 and see if we can break this down a little bit, Joseph. So we have this, again, this simplistic view of the network. And so the problem shows up on the ZOS channel down here at the bottom of the screen. But the connection is broken, and it could have happened anywhere. It could have happened from the client. It could have happened from something in the cloud. It could have happened locally on the queue manager on ZOS. Let's go to slide 35, Joseph, please. So most likely there was a reset that was generated from somewhere. And the reset could have come from the client. The reset could have come from some intermediate firewall along the way. We just don't know where that came from, but if we have a trace, a network trace, we'll see the reset come in. Now, that will tell us that the reset come in, but the problem is you don't know where it came from. So tracing on both sides of the channel, meaning if you have access to the client and to the server side of the connection, and you do concurrent tracing, you can narrow down whether it came from the client really or whether it came from some intermediate hop. If it comes from some intermediate hop, say in the IP cloud that you don't have control over, it gets much more difficult to find out whether there's a firewall in there that's actually sending the reset, maybe because the connection, the firewall changed, and there's now timeout values for connections on the firewall, and the connection times out, so the firewall resets the connection when there's data actually being sent and received across the channel. So there could be things that are happening in that case. And when it gets much more difficult if you don't control all the way through the connection to be able to narrow that down. But by looking at one trace on one side, we can know that the reset came in, and we can eliminate pieces as we go along about where the reset actually came from. It may take multiple attempts at tracing to figure out where the actual problem originated. So, Joseph, let's go to slide 36, please. In summary, we talked about networking concepts, how to trace the network layer, and we looked at in detail at a packet trace and went through that kind of quickly and because we're kind of limited to an hour of time here. I know your time is valuable. We don't want to spend a whole lot of time, but hopefully it gave you an overview of what to look for in a packet trace. In a good case, so when a bad case comes along, you have something to compare it to know maybe where a problem is occurring. And then we looked at the name server issue where channels are not able to, the chin is not able to resolve an IP address to a host name and how to bypass that problem. And then the problem where a reset comes in, it's being reported on ZOS, but it could have happened anyplace else, and tracking that down may require you to trace multiple points in the network to find out where that reset is coming from. So slide 37, Joseph. So this chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere to Support Techno Exchange webcasts like the ones you've attended today, and access to previously recorded presentations. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphereUserGroups.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Joseph, I'm going to turn this back over to you.
Thank you, Rick, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Courtney, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Brent Morris. Your line is open.
Yes, first of all, I just wanted to thank you for the presentation. Also, the fact that MQ Series, being a mature product, is able to actually take those TCP error codes and allow them to be bubbled up and seen in the chin. I just wanted to give you some feedback, having had a chance to experience both your name server issue for the benefit of the call. I've seen where somebody may take what is the first or perhaps the first and the second listing out of those name servers. And what ends up happening is as it goes out to execute that get info, it's going top to bottom on the list. And so you go through that entire timeout cycle while it goes to the first name. And if that server has been decommissioned, then it starts working on the second name in the list, and so on and so on. So you can end up with finally getting your channel to start, but it has to go through that entire cycle. The other thing is that something that's a little bit advanced in dealing with that econ reset is that if a company has a an intrusion detection system, I have seen where putting in the connection reset into your as a footprint or a fingerprint into your intrusion detection system, and then going ahead running your test to see if you can get your channels to work, that will actually narrow down what device is creating your TCP reset. Just out of curiosity, could you give us a perspective of percentage-wise for your troubleshooting calls? What do you get regarding TCP resets? Is it 5% of your calls, 2% of your calls, 20% of your calls?
That's a tough question because, you know, we have a group of people that work on our problem records. You know, we all see the problem records come in, but we don't always know the resolution to every problem record. But I would say that the econ resets or the network, the connections closing unexpectedly, is probably 10-15% of our PMRs, maybe 20%. That's a wild guess, so don't hold me to that. I'm really not sure. But thank you for the input about the multiple name servers in the list of queries that go out, because that's exactly right. What we find out, most cases, it's not the name servers. It's a name server delay, not a complete failure that causes the backup. Because you're right, if you have three name servers in the list and all three of those are queried one at a time, but each the first one times out after 30 seconds, the second one times it after 30 seconds, and then you find the third one finally answers, it's at least a minute later, maybe even a minute and a half later by the time you get that response back. And then by that time, there's hundreds of other channels that have backed up behind waiting to do the same thing, and it just becomes very cumbersome. And that's why I say that default timeout value of 30 seconds is really extreme, and probably ought to look at maybe making that a lot smaller.
Thank you for a wonderful presentation. It's just a quick follow-up question. Would you say, do you folks see ephemeral port exhaustion as a reason for folks getting channels that can't start, because it turns out, again, those dynamic ports, most IP stacks are limited to the, you know, a cap of 5,000, with that first 124 being reserved. And I was just wondering, do you see that coming into to you folks of femoral port exhaustion as being root cause for connectivity issues?
Very rarely. I've not seen any in my year and a half working in ZOS Blitzer MQ Level 2. So it's very rare.
All right. Thank you again for a great presentation.
We do have a question. One moment.
Thank you for the nice presentation. I have a question. We have MQ server-to-server connection connecting WAN between AIX servers. What we're trying to know is we calculated the bandwidth of the application throughput of the MQ channel. What we found out was we're getting for about 3 Mbps. If you compare to LAN, it's about 55 or 60 Mbps. So we're trying to see if there are any commands to trace at the AIX level, and are there any parameters we would need to look into to be able to increase the per-process bandwidth throughput on the MQ channel?
When you're talking about the LAN, are you talking about LAN speed? And these AIX servers are on the same LAN?
We have, we have tested between two servers within the same LAN and also over the WAN. And we have a limit for a single channel bandwidth.
Right.
We found out there is a hard limit, which we believe is the maximum application throughput for the MQ channel process.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to see if there are any any commands at the AIX level similar to the packet trace on the ZOS, and maybe some critical points we need to look into.
The IP trace on AIX is equivalent to the packet trace on ZOS, and it has many parameters as well to control what you trace. I'm not as familiar with the command to start the IP trace on AIX, but if you look at the man page for IP trace, it should help you with the parameters. And I'm not sure about tools, but, you know, when you're talking about network speed and LAN speed versus actual application speed, you have to be careful because the actual LAN speed is not always reached by the application, because the application has processing that it needs to do as well as the actual network flowing across the network. So because a particular LAN is able to, let's say, at speeds of 1 gigabit, right, doesn't mean the application is going to be able to attain 1 gigabit because of the processing that goes on in the stack and in the application itself. I would see if there is some bulk transfer tools. And when I say bulk transfer, like FTP is a bulk transfer. Like if you're putting a file from one server to another, if all data is flowing one direction, that's bulk data transfer. So it all flows across in one direction, and you'll get to see the application speed across the network. And that also factors in the TCP and IP layers. So, and, you know, WebSphere MQ, for the most part, is not bulk data transfer, right? You're exchanging messages, and there's channel chatter between the messages going back and forth. So it depends on the size of the message whether you're going to get to bulk data transfer speed with WebSphere MQ. But I don't know of any tools specifically to trace bulk data transfer on AIX unless you use FTP. And, again, the IP trace is the equivalent for the packet trace on ZOS. I hope that helps. I'm really not too familiar with AIX platform and what's available there, though. Sorry.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks.
We have no further questions.
Thank you, Courtney. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.